Welcome to another episode of the Good Listening To Show, your life and times with me, Chris Grimes, the storytelling show that features The Clearing, where all good questions come to get asked and all good stories come to be told, and where all my guests have two things in common. They're all creative individuals and all with an interesting story to tell. There are some lovely storytelling metaphors, a clearing, a tree, a juicy storytelling exercise called 5-4-3-2-1, some alchemy, some gold, a cheeky bit of Shakespeare, and a cake. So it's all to play for. So yes, welcome to the Good Listening To Show, your life and times with me, Chris Grimes. Are you sitting comfortably? Then we shall begin. Get in. So welcome to a lovely episode of the Good Listening To Show, Stories of Distinction and Genius. And who better than to have Saikat Ahmed in The Clearing? He is an actor I've known a long time, based in Bristol. He's just finished in The Life of Pi, woohoo, in the Wyndham's Theatre. You've been doing Mama G, and you've also been understudying Papa. I can't remember if he had a G on the end as well.
No. And Baba.
Sorry, not Baba Baba. Or Baba Papa. That's a whole different thing and not the same play. And it's been glorious because you've had 250,000 people seeing it. Apparently you've had 450 standing ovations.
Yeah, just for me.
And this is going to be like one man clapping if I try and stand up now. But wonderful. And yes, I've even seen you be the most deliciously glorious Tinkerbell in Peter Pan at the Old Vic, where I've got an image I still conjure off. And when I think of you, I think of you in a pink tutu, if I may.
Oh, listen. Yeah.
So you're an actor, a storyteller, and you've won awards for your storytelling too, haven't you, actually?
So Bristol has a really wonderful, vibrant kind of storytelling culture. And I won something called the Golden Yarn Award, one of the festivals. I mean, it has to be said, it's not gold anymore. The paint is peeling off, but it's going to have pride of place. A bit of fun. I mean, yeah, awards are wonderful because they give you validation. And actually, if you're in the arts, you probably got a deep cesspool of a hole inside you. After validation. Oh my God, it's got so serious so quickly.
That's lovely. Congratulations for the expression, a deep cesspool. No one's ever said that in my podcast.
But actually, it's not about awards. It's about a bit of fun. And the storytelling, the biggest joy of that was that I got to meet so many wonderful people.
Yes.
It was a funny thing that actually, we're getting ahead of ourselves, but I decided to be a storyteller many, many years ago when my kids were very young. And I thought, wow, what a radical idea. No one has ever done this. And then I moved to Bristol and everyone's a storyteller. It's like, oh, you're a storyteller. Get to the back of the queue.
That's very relatable, by the way. Back in the day, I thought, oh, I know, I'm a genius. I'll make a short film. Everyone was making short films. Then, hey, I struck gold. I decided to do a podcast, at the point at which I saw a statistic the next day, 850,000 podcasts in the UK alone.
I mean, this is a wonderful thing that you're doing. I have listened. And yeah, it's kind of joyous. It's just, and I know that in one of the podcasts you mentioned that this came out of the pandemic, and actually, you know, really tough time, but also nice to take some positive stuff away from it.
So, yeah, there is that thing of out of adversity comes great creativity, and you know, as we know, you've just survived the pandemic and the zombie apocalypse yourself. You know, Life of Pi would not have been possible just a year ago.
And yeah. Then, yeah. Yeah, absolutely. And also, you know, all these things take on a greater meaning. You know, you really kind of appreciate what you have when you feel like it's been taken away.
Yes. So,
yeah.
Also, I love the Golden Yarn Award that you got, because there's a golden thread of storytelling in your life, certainly, but also in my life, because, you know, acting at its best is about really delicious storytelling.
Oh, yeah, 100%. 100%. I mean, you know, stories, I don't want to give too much away, but stories are a central part of my life. You know, telling a good story, having the right people to tell the story to. I mean, that's what it's all about, you know, having that captive audience. I mean, sometimes they need to be captive.
I was strapped to a chair. What? No, I've been to see some of your wonderful...
Well, we're not going to talk about that, Chris.
You did some cathartic one-man plays as well, which I came to see a couple of, to do with where you're from. And also, I know your father died in very recent history.
Yeah.
The fabric of who you are, which is wonderful to observe, actually. And listen, because I've heard some of your poetic responses to the pandemic as well.
Yeah, I mean, the poetry was really, it was really odd, actually, because I used to write a lot of poetry as a kid. And that was my father's influence, because my father was a GP in Birmingham, but in his, you could say, secret life, he was a writer. I mean, not secret, he did write, he wrote books, plays, he wrote all sorts of things, but he only ever wrote in Bengali, so, you know, your listenership won't have heard of him, but... poetry was a big thing. And so he always, you know, I think I took that from him. I kind of went, oh, yeah, I like writing poems. And I still have my books, my notebooks I had as a kind of, you know, we're talking primary school. And I read them now and I mean, they're horrible. They're awful. But they take me right back to that kind of moment. But yeah, so I hadn't written poetry. And then actually for me, there was a lot of stuff I was really angry about. I'm still angry. I mean, angry, I think, unfortunately or fortunately, depending on which way you look at it, anger is something that a lot of us in the UK, probably around the world, are holding. And hopefully we're using it towards a purpose, towards a positive purpose.
And so that teases up beautifully. I'm going to tip us into the lip now of the structure that it's going to be my great privilege to curate you through. It's a clearing, a tree, a cheeky bit of Shakespeare, a couple of random squirrels and a cake. And there's this exercise called 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. Check out my swanky background. It's all there. The symbolics are there. So just a quick surprise question. If people don't have any reference point, you know that really clunky question that happens in life? Oh, hello. What do you do? If someone just finds you interesting as a stranger and they go, hello, what do you do? What's your favourite way of answering or avoiding that? What would you say Psychat Ahmed does?
Oh, that's a very good question. I guess I'd probably say I'm an actor and writer. I've been warned by various people in the past that, you know, theatre practitioner, no one knows, you know, unless you're actually in the industry. A theatre practitioner, oh, do you work in a hospital?
You do an important job. Yeah. It's the desk, yes.
So theatre practitioner, creative practitioner, nah. I mean, in its most basic form, I'm an actor. So I put on fancy clothes and do what other people tell me to do. And then occasionally I'm a writer where I have my own original thoughts. But are any thoughts original?
And let's not forget reincorporating your Tinkerbell. You're an actor and a pink tutu, and bless you for that. That you were a brilliant Tinkerbell, I have to say.
Do you know what? One of the joys of my life. In fact, I should say this. So my daughter went to drama school, and she's now doing an MA in applied theatre. But while she was doing her undergrad, in her second year, she moved in with a group of students, you know, fellow students, and they were all on different courses. And one of the girls that she was living with was having a conversation with her mother on the phone, on the landline, and said, you know, just chat. And then at the end went, okay, I got to go, awawu. And Beth was just walking through the hallway and she said, awawu. And she said, what, why are you saying that? And she went, oh, we all went to see Peter Pan, and this like crazy, weird Asian guy was playing Tinkerbell, and he kept saying, "Awawu, awawu," and Beth went, "That's my dad." So, funny how these things pop up.
Yes, what a, I'm so happy that I reincorporated that, because we wouldn't have got the Oahu story necessarily. Oahu. So bless you for listening. So here we are in the Good Listening to show, Stories of Distinction and Genius. You are distinct and you're a genius in the plays I've seen you do. And yes, Oahu, Tinkerbell, the whole construct of that was really, really lovely. It was, I remember the Pink Tutu and DMs as well. So it's all good.
Oh, God, yeah.
So let's get you going then. What is, where is a clearing, literally or metaphorically, for you, Psycat? Where do you go to get clutter-free, inspirational and able to think?
Oh, this, do you know what? I mean, this was possibly the hardest question, because my mind is always busy. I find it very hard to kind of empty and I mean, I run a lot, so that's a good way. But actually, I was thinking creatively, and there is a dusty room in the basement of a halls of residence in Cardiff. And I didn't live at those halls, but I did go to Cardiff Uni, and I was missing having a piano. And a friend of mine said, well, I know there's a piano in this basement. And you go in and it's a horrible room. It's tiny, there's chairs stacked everywhere, but there was a piano, and that was like a clearing of everything. Just being able to sit and play on this really kind of out of tune piano. But how wonderful.
Oh, God, I love that. So, yes, wow. So can we have that as your clearing then? The basement in Cardiff University, stacked with chairs. There's your piano in the dusty basement. Lovely. Okay, so I'm going to arrive with a tree now to even clutter the space even more. Shake your tree to see which storytelling apples fall out. This is where you've been kind enough to have answered the construct 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. We've had 5 minutes to have thought about 4 things that have shaped you, 3 things that inspire you. 2 things that never fail to grab your attention is borrow from the film Up, Molt, Squirrels, you know what, never fails to grab your attention. And then a quirky or unusual fact about you, storyteller, actor, Psycat Ahmed, and writer, sorry, that we couldn't possibly know until you tell us. So over to you to shake the canopy of your tree.
Yeah, shake, 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 shake. Okay, so I did only take 5 minutes to do this.
Good.
It's really hard. So the first thing that has shaped me, and it's a huge thing, it probably comes under the title of history. And specifically, I'm talking about 1971, the kind of formation of Bangladesh. I'm going back further than that to 1947, partition. I mean, these are all big ideas, big moments in history. And as a kid, I didn't really understand them. I didn't really know about partition until I saw, we went to see Gandhi at the cinema, the film, not the person. As a family, we didn't go to the cinema a huge amount, but that was one where my dad was like, we're going to see this. And that had a big impression on me. But I think the whole thing about 1971 and Bangladesh is my whole childhood was kind of shaped in the shadow of that. I mean, I allude to it in some of my shows, but actually we had the Bangladeshi flag in different rooms. We had Bengali freedom songs playing. I mean, I wasn't fluent in Bengali. I can understand it and I can speak it, but it was like a constant presence, you know. And you know that kind of, in Goodness Gracious Me, there's that ongoing joke with, I think it's someone Sanjeev Bhaskar plays, where he goes, oh, talking about this thing, Indian. Talking about that thing, Indian. It was kind of similar with my father, that everything seemed to connect to Bangladesh. And at the time, it was like, oh, yeah, okay, all right, I get it. You know, Bangladesh is great. I mean, it's not that great, because when I go back there, I always get the runs. So what does that tell me? But actually, It was only after I wrote my first solo show and I really kind of started to dive into these things that you go, oh, there's kind of generational trauma going on. There's also like the thing of getting up and leaving everything you know is such a big thing. And I mean, that's something that I get quite upset about when I look at like the current climate in this country and how we talk about migrants and how we talk about refugees. And it's this idea sometimes that some people have, not everyone. Most people are wonderful in the world. Most people are. And even those who aren't, there's reasons for that. But it's like this idea that you leave your home on a whim. No one does that. So Bangladesh, as not even as a country, as an idea.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
Apples and pears, beef and Skittles, cider with Rosie, common or garden, Ant and Deck, fish and chips, Mum and Dad.
UK Health Radio and Health Triangle magazine. Each is good by itself, but enjoying both is always better. Add Health Triangle magazine to your monthly health regime. Check it out at ukhealthradio.com.
A cancer diagnosis can be scary and stressful for everyone involved. Hello Love is a contemporary living space and well-being center in central London where anyone can come and learn about illness prevention and non-toxic practice. Inside, you will find a vegan restaurant, juice bar, and holistic dojo that encourage lifestyle changes to help heal mind, body, and spirit connection. Cancer patients are offered free sessions. To find out more, please visit us at hellolove.org.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
So that's a wonderfully seismic and profound first shaping. What's the next thing that shaped you?
Okay, so I've kind of touched on this a little bit. Education and kind of language. So putting aside the fact that, you know, the history of Bangladesh is totally connected with the language movement. 21st February is kind of International Language Day, and that came out of the language movement in Bangladesh. My father had such a love for language because of the writing and all of that. So our house was full of books, poetry books, plays. I'm not convinced my father ever read any of them, if I'm not. I mean, terrible thing to say, but he just loved to have books and books and books.
So number three now, I'll occasionally go... If we're going down a bit of a rap, it's lovely and delicious stuff. So yeah. There's no punishment for me going. But I just have a comedy thing of cash in. Number two, please. This is shaping number three, please.
Yeah, definitely. So number three, I've been most shaped by the people that are so different to me. So I alluded to it earlier about when you meet people and you kind of go, your life is so different. So for a while, I did a bit of teaching in a kind of specialist unit in the southwest in Taunton. And I remember all boys, all white. I don't know if some of them had ever had a conversation with a person of colour. And I remember on my first day, I turned up and I put my briefcase down and went, right, we're going to get on with this lesson. And one of the kids went, oh, my God, he's put his case down. It's a bomb. He's Al-Qaeda. He's Taliban. And he picked up the case and started running around with it, trying to throw it out of a window. Now, I found this hilarious, but I couldn't show them that. All of them were so racist. I mean, like, the stuff they said to me, I don't want to repeat.
And that's so on the edge, was he? Do you think he was taking the proverbial Michael?
He was taking the mick, but it came from a place of like, you're a person of colour, so you're clearly
racist. Yes,
it was really, really racist. And then when I left that place about a year later, you know, I didn't work all the time there, but I worked there with enough regularity that I really got to know these boys. It was heartbreaking because I loved them and they kind of loved me. And it just goes to show that there is hope in the world, that you can get past things.
Really admire your hope in being immediately amused as opposed to offended, which is incredibly powerful in terms of what you're like.
I mean, I've got a... My sense of humour, I need to be a little bit cautious, but I've had people come up to me on the first day of jobs and go, "You're Psycat. I heard you're the filthiest bastard I'm ever going to meet." And you kind of go, "Actually, I don't know what you're talking about.
That's not me.
That's not me." And then like day three, you kind of go, "Oh, yeah, no, I see what you mean now.
I am the filthiest." Yes. Bless you for that. Yeah. But you're being wonderfully and deliciously clean today. Not that you need to be, but that's all tickety-boo.
No, but actually, you know, there is... I know it's such an obvious thing to say. There is more that binds us than pulls us apart. And sometimes when you read the news or you look at what's going on in the world, you don't get that. You don't see that. But it's the truth.
And as you said already, there is hope. That's something you've said again, which is...
Yeah.
So I'm just going to go... And this is, again, it's never a punishment. It's just now the fourth shapeage, please.
Okay, so...
Cashier number four.
Pressure cooker of expectation and identity is probably the biggest thing. So, you know, all these things are connected. Bangladesh, they're ever-present. Private education, you know, pushed, kind of foisted on me. Expectation of grades. I mean, my mum, bless her, is still with us. She expects, she demands, you know, the best, the highest grade. You know, you don't come back and go, "Oh, I got 98%, because the question will be, what happened to the other two? And all of those things mean that, and I've been told this before, I'm very, very, very hard on myself.
Which comes from the conditioning, because that is, yes, that's one of the, in the coaching and facilitation work I do, that's about the drivers that we have. Whereas I, in my own, if 90% is congratulations, that's way beyond the first, rather than what happened to the 2%. It's just a yin and a yang of how people perceive the same circumstances differently.
Yeah.
And it brings with it humongous pressure, which makes you have a very high bar of probably pressured excellence.
Yeah. And that then in turn connects to, you know, what I'm saying about the clearing and being able to clear my mind. I really struggle with, you know, when we go on holiday, I've always got a notebook. It's always there just in case. Oh, yeah, I've just realised that great play that everyone's crying out to see. I'm going to write it down.
That's so relatable, Psyche. I find it very difficult to take a monumental chill pill as well.
Yeah. I mean, obviously, I've just finished Pi, and that was a wonderful job. It was 6 months. It was intensely physical. And, you know, my wife said to me, "Oh, it'd be great to have a break." And I kind of went, "Well, yeah, for a couple of days." Yeah. But actually, something that was, you know, about the pandemic, which was amazing, and I know a lot of people have said this, that first stretch, to get off the hamster wheel and go, I don't need to worry about auditions because there aren't any. I don't need to worry about getting that next job because there aren't any.
Yes.
Amazing.
And that lovely adage of enjoy what this is before it isn't, and that's very precious.
Yeah, and actually what I'm trying to do is to keep hold of that sensibility.
Yes.
And really kind of root it in my everyday existence. But it's hard because I'm fighting with kind of 40 odd years of conditioning.
There's a lovely, lovely irony of life of pie making you fit, where the life of pies would obviously make you very, very fat, which is a completely wrong reference, of course.
Yeah. It's, yeah, I mean, that's the other thing, but actually, as I get older, you know, exercise and being physical has become so much more important, you know, and actually running is a real, is a salve.
I mean, love that. Running is a salve.
Yeah. I mean, during Pi, I wasn't doing it because actually I was working hard enough, but I got into the habit basically of running every day and just, and it's partly physical, but it's mostly just that space, that clearing, as you were saying.
Yes.
Yeah, I love it.
Okay, now we've done some shaking of your foliage. Now we're staying in the clearing, moving away from the tree. And next we're talking about... Oh, no, sorry, Wibble. It's my show. I've forgotten my own structure. We're talking about three things that inspire you now. We're still in the tree. Sorry, three things that inspire you.
Okay, three things that inspire me. So the first is going right back to my childhood. Myths, legends, kind of archetypes. You know, when I got into storytelling, that was because... I had a love of myths and legends. What I love is taking a story that's really simple, but being able to dive right down into the heart of it. I mean, that it's this. Yeah. I mean, I do sometimes think if I ever gave up acting, I could happily spend the rest of my life being a storyteller, but there's not a lot of money in it.
So going right back to being sort of a sort of medieval wandering minstrel telling a story.
Well, this is okay. So this is terrible. When I had that revelation of like, I'm going to be a storyteller, because I'd never heard of anyone being a storyteller. I thought, well, I've got to look the part. So I was living in London and I went to a shop in Acton and I bought this kind of almost like faux leather, stretchy PVC thing. But it was the closest I could get to what I thought a storyteller tunic might be made of. And I made a huge T-shaped T-shirt that was like, I'm going to have a belt and it'll be like, I'll look like a storyteller from, you know, ancient Rome. And then I went to do a story in a primary school and I was talking to really little kids and I crouched down to, you know, ooh, tell them the story. And I could just see them all going... And I have never worn that since. That was horrible. There is nothing worse than being in a primary school trying to create the magic of theatre, thinking these little kids are looking at my dick. So
that's the story they're going to remember. This horrible weird bloke came in, sort of half Gandalf, half Glastonbury storyteller, and I could see his. Yes.
I mean, what's happened is there's a whole group of kids in West London who now go, yeah, I can't read a story without getting a tremor.
Lovely. So yes, so you dispelled with that, but you still have at your core, you're still wanting to tell stories.
Myths, legends.
Yeah.
I mean, it's like there's nothing better than going, oh, the story of Heracles, or you know, the Monkey King, or Norse mythology. It's like it's all there.
Yes.
Because also it's so simple, you can lay on what you need to for any given time. If you want a story of politics, then look at the Greek gods. If you want a story of love and jealousy, then, you know, you can find it all there. Second thing that inspires me is experts. I know Gove famously said, oh, we've had enough of experts, but he's an idiot. experts... are experts for a reason. They've studied really hard. They've spent the time getting the knowledge. I'm not talking about false experts. I'm not talking about people who set themselves up at something. I'm talking about people who have experience and credentials. And I suppose the big thing for me was when I started touring my own work, I was so naive. I literally, Chris, I wrote the play, sat in the dressing room of the Tobacco Factory Theatre while I was doing Cinderella. I used to go in early and just sit in the dressing room on my own for the whole day, and I wrote my first play. And then when I toured it round, you know, the first venue I got to, he went, okay, so what do you want with the lighting? And I kind of went, oh. I just remember this guy going, right, okay, clearly you're an idiot. I'm going to work with you. And he spent about 2 hours basically helping me design and plot these lights. And it was so generous and so giving of him. But it also made me go, wow, lights can do this. I mean, I've been an actor for 20 years. I didn't realize that you can tell the story with lights and with sound cues and, you know, really obvious stuff.
Yeah.
But it's only obvious after you know it. So, yeah, experts inspire me because I like to think I know everything, but actually it turns out I generally know nothing.
Yes, and as we know, the world is full of people, experts, who are basically just sort of trolls who sit in their underpants at 4 a.m. trying to put the world to rights. Yeah. Those are not experts, people.
Yeah.
I love that. So experts, when it's backed up by study, academia, and a craft.
Yeah, and just, and a kind of also the humility and the honesty to be able to pass on that expertise.
Yes.
There's no point being an... I mean, this is one of the things about theatre that sometimes it's a bit of a bugbear is when you get in a room and people go, well, we're doing this theatre and we're terribly clever. I mean, I don't know if the audience will get it, but... And it's like, no, connect, open it up.
Yes.
This is for people. Yeah. Yeah.
Yes. And thrice yes. Lovely. You could be allowed a third... thing that has inspired you?
Play inspires me. And
do you mean just titting about type play, you mean, or you mean a
I mean every kind of play? I don't mean a play. I don't mean theatre necessarily. I mean play. I mean physical play, Foursquare, board games, anything, because there's something so joyous about going, we're investing our time, our love, our energy for no other reason than to be with each other and enjoy this moment. Because that's what play is. You know, I remember when my kids were little. I mean, they're 23 and 20 now. But I would spend all my time just playing imaginative games and action figures. I mean, I basically... took it as, maybe this is something that a lot of parents do, a lot of fathers do. I basically went, right, I've got kids. They will be into everything that I was into. So comic books, action figures, all that kind of stuff. And it's like, yeah, I'm going to bombard you until...
You get it, yeah.
You get it. But actually, yeah, play is just... it's the stuff of life.
Yes.
You know, and it's an act of love as well. Yeah.
I completely agree. Okay, now, two things that never fail to grab your attention. What are your squirrels, Psychat Ahmed?
Okay, so there's a couple of the two things. A well-seasoned, well-honed jazz trio. Oh, my God. And it, I mean, I love all sorts of jazz, but I'm talking about the classic combo of piano, double bass, and drums. I'm there. I'm like, even if I'm in a lift and it's shit music, like I'm going up to the top floor and I'm going back down again just so I can hear how this resolves. Oh, it doesn't resolve. It's on a loop. Whatever. But yeah, a good jazz trio. I mean, in another life, that would have been me. I mean, I should have been born probably in the 1930s. So I could have been in my 20s in the 1950s and I would have based myself in Paris and I would have been in and out of those jazz clubs.
A Bengali jazz musician in Paris.
That's the next show. I when I was at uni, I used to go to jazz clubs and play the piano. And occasionally, if I was feeling really brave, I'd sing at the same time.
Have you ever been in a jazz trio on the piano?
Only in jazz clubs and more often than not in open mic nights. I just I just love it because also, you know, it's that thing of like, in theatre, we're trying to connect and with people and communicate a story. And it's like, to me, I kind of go, well, that's what music does. And it's such an obvious thing to say. Mm. But it's like, when I listen to the piano solo of Bill Evans, or when I listen to, you know, Charles Mingus or John Coltrane, it's like, there are no words, but the story is so clear.
Yes.
And it moves me to tears. I mean, I'm the only one in my family that appreciates jazz. So it's kind of like, maybe that gives it an additional, yeah, I'm just going to put my headphones on and just zone out.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm a bit of a, you know that guy on the Far Show who's like,
Yes.
That's me. But I love it. The other thing.
Yeah. Second. Squirrel.
Trees. It became an ongoing joke during the pandemic. We'd go on long walks and I would just stop at every other tree and go, can we just take this in? Just. And that wasn't me taking the mic. It was like, they're amazing. I mean, maybe it's the fact that anything natural is amazing if you take the time to really engage with it and really look. I mean, because I see faces and everything, you know, which like we all do. And I'd see a tree and I'd see a story and I'd see a magical land and I'd see a face in the tree. And also I love climbing trees. I mean, I don't know if I still can, maybe my knees aren't up to it, but there was a time where, especially when the kids were really young, if there was a tree, I'd be straight up it like a squirrel. Trees are, I mean, also, aside from the fact that they give us life, aside from all of that, they're just beautiful, beautiful things.
You could well have been a squirrel in another life. I love that description.
Why another life? This life.
I am a squirrel. That was such a beautiful appreciation of trees and all they bring. Are you a member of Western Burt Arboretum, by the way?
I don't think I am anymore. I was. I probably should again. I mean, I spent a long time going around Western Burt.
Yeah.
I'm just... Also, it's like when you go to somewhere like Western Burt and you see the trees from different parts of the world, I just find it mesmerizing. I mean, to the extent that actually we'd go on walks and, you know, my kids would be like, oh, Dad, here's another tree. We'll come back in 15 minutes. Yeah. But, yeah, wonderful.
Perfect. And now, a quirky or unusual fact about you we couldn't possibly know until you tell us.
Okay, so, as I mentioned, I have a brother. His name is Sagar, which means the ocean. So a quirky fact you don't know about me is really that could have been my name. So
did you say it meant the ocean? Did I hear that?
Ocean. So my name, Saikat or Shoikot, as it's pronounced in Bengali, means the seashore. When my brother was born, he's older than me. My parents wanted to call him Shoikot. They wanted to call him my name. But my paternal grandmother, or as I call her, bed granny, that's a whole nother thing. She was basically there giving blessings for Shagor, for Sagar. And so they didn't have the heart to not call him that. So they called him that. And then when I was born in this country, my father just sent a telegram back saying, Saikat is born. Because that took out any kind of discussion.
Yes.
And I love my name. It took me a long time to love it. As a kid, I was like, oh.
You're the only Saikat I know, by the way, and I love your name.
Do you know what? Bless you for saying that. Turns out there's a lot of us. I think if you type in Saikat, I think it's like the organisational name for some Bangladeshi association in America. So if you type in Saikat, you just get loads of random photos.
There's a whole association of Saikat. Hey, where's Saikat cats? We are the cool cats.
And that's the other thing. Maybe other people get this. Occasionally, I'll get Facebook requests from Psychat Ahmed. So a different Psychat Ahmed somewhere else in the world, probably Bangladesh, has gone, he's got the same name as me. We've got to be Facebook friends. I don't understand the logic of that, but,
no,
you know.
Although somewhere out in the world, if you Google my name, Chris Grimes, there is a hapless twonk who got whipped off a cliff holding the wrong end of a kite.
Oh, God.
Yes, he's. I think he survived, but I did get a text going, are you all right? And are you that twonk?
He survived and he went on to make a podcast.
Exactly. And the rest is history. Yes, yes, getting yanked off a cliff. Okay, wonderful. Now...
That sounds so rude.
Pardon?
That sounds so rude, getting yanked off a cliff.
Remind me, we're coming full circle to you are the most filthy people that the members of your company ever know. You described it more eloquently than that. What did they say to you? They said you are the...
Oh, you're the bastard you're ever likely to meet. Something like that.
Bless you. But I think you're being charm personified as well.
Thank you.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
A cancer diagnosis can be scary and stressful for everyone involved. Hello Love is a contemporary living space and well-being center in central London where anyone can come and learn about illness prevention and non-toxic practice. Inside, you will find a vegan restaurant, juice bar, and holistic dojo that encourage lifestyle changes to help heal mind, body, and spirit connection. Cancer patients are offered free sessions. To find out more, please visit us at hellolove.org.
A for horses, B for mutton, C more cheeks, dig for victory. E bar gold.
UK Health Radio and Health Triangle Magazine. Each is good by itself, but enjoying both is always better.
Marks and Spencer.
Add Health Triangle Magazine to your monthly health regime. Check it out at ukhealthradio.com.
T for two.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
Wonderful. Now, we've done your tree. Huzzah. So now we're going to talk about alchemy and gold in the clearing still. So when you're at purpose and in flow, what are you absolutely happiest doing, Psychad?
I think making people laugh or cry. eliciting some sort of emotional response. I love telling stories. And I'm not even talking about storytelling and myths and legends. I'm talking about, like, oh, let me tell you a funny thing that happened to me in an audition. I just because it's all about connecting with people and sharing. I absolutely love it.
So now we're going to award you with a cake, and rather than just splatch it in your face, this is a fiery final storytelling metaphor of where you get to put a cherry on the cake. So before I unpack the cake for you, do you like cake, Psychat?
I've come to like it. I never liked it as a kid. I hated it. I wouldn't even eat my own birthday cakes. But, yeah, I don't eat a lot of cake. I'm very discerning. You know, I like a good ganache on my cake. Or my daughter once made a carrot cake. It took her, like, hours, but it was worth it. She'll never make it again. It was too much effort. Fundamentally lazy, but she's not. but actually, yeah, I do eat cake. I mean, I'm a very good boy. I'll eat most things that are put in front of me.
So you can have a discerning cake then of your choice. So is
no cream, no berries.
No creams. What, squitty cream? Or are we talking fresh cream?
Either.
It's got to have cream squitted in there somewhere.
No.
Oh, no cream.
No cream.
Just to be clear, I nearly gave you a cake with cream there.
Oh, my God. Anyway, yeah. I'd probably still eat because I'm very polite.
And you mentioned, was it Ganesh? You said I like ganache. So is that a topping or is that an actual cake? I'm being confused
now. Ganache is like, maybe I've got that wrong. I think like that chocolatey, you know, a chocolate ganache is like silky smooth and... I mean, you can't go wrong with a cheesecake.
Yeah, we'll just flop some chocolate on anyway.
I didn't realise until I was an adult that cheesecake does not taste of cheddar. I never had cheesecake as a kid because I was like, why am I going to eat
cheesecake
cake that tastes like cheese, but doesn't. Yeah.
So all of that allows me to now get you to put a cherry on the cake. So the multi-layered cake is, what's the best piece of stuff like, in fact, I'll go back one. What's a favourite inspirational quote that's always given you succour and pulled you towards your future?
Good question. So for years, I don't know where this quote is from. For years, I had it printed out and put on my notice board that the difference between a good play and a great play is that after the experience of a great play, you understand a little bit more about why you are alive. So wanky. But, I mean, it really is. But actually, I kind of also really believe it.
So just tee it up again, just say it in isolation.
The difference between a good play and a great play is that after the experience of a great play, you understand a little bit more about why you are alive. And I believe it wholeheartedly. You know, I do believe in the power of theatre to really kind of affect change, make people think, open up the world to new possibilities. You know, I mean, yeah, you want to entertain. Of course you do.
And through the gift of storytelling, which is...
Yeah, but if you can make people go, oh, that thing isn't right in the world. What a gift. What a gift to be able to... also, E.M. Forster, Only Connect. That's, you know, that's really important. And the best piece of advice... So I was doing a radio play and there was a very prominent South Asian British actor on the piece. And I was quite young at the time. And I said to him, oh, how do I move to the next level like you? And he went, there are no levels. And I kind of went, oh, God, that's really depressing. But actually, and I don't know, if, you know, it's not true for everyone, but actually it's given me a lot of comfort to actually go, don't be so worried about trying to climb somewhere. Just enjoy where you are. It's kind of liberating to not worry about trying to get somewhere else. Yeah.
What notes, help or advice might you proffer to a younger version of yourself, Psychat?
That's a good question. Stay in touch with people. It's easier said than done because we work in an industry where you kind of come together. But those people who really kind of touch your heart, make an effort. I'm very bad at staying in touch with people. I feel a lot of love, but then I also get distracted by internal workings of my kind of dubious mind.
It's your squirrel. You're accessing your inner squirrel again.
Yeah, I go a tree. A jazz trio. A jazz trio.
See what you did there. you're jazz riffing now. It's fantastic. Yeah,
so easily distracted. Stay in touch with people. And also, this is something I do now that I didn't do when I was younger. Tell people what they mean to you. So I quite often say to friends, I'm not talking about people in my family, but friends, I'll be talking to them and I'll go, I just want to say, I really love you. And actually, some people will think, oh, that's a bit weird. But most will go, oh, that's a beautiful thing to say. I mean, obviously, don't say it to strangers, unless you really want to. You know, the guy who's sorting out your car. You could say, I really appreciate your work. Probably shouldn't say, I really love you.
I love the fact it is an elevated currency. When Psychat says that to you, it's meant with all sincerity, which is...
Yeah, great. Yeah. Because, you know...
It has wonderful intention behind it.
Yeah, and actually, people are great. And, you know, I feel very blessed for all the people that I've met in my life. You know, how lucky am I that they spilled into my orbit.
Just deliberately allowing a bit of silence there. There's a couple more components. I'm going to ramp up in this deliberate way. So where can we find out, and rest assured it's coming, but where can we find out more about Psychat on the internet in having...
Crime Watch. No, website. I've got a website, which is psychatarmed.com. I'm also on Twitter at Ahmed Psychat. Just switched them around. And then I'm on Instagram on Psychat Ahmed.
Okay, now we are ramping up to Shakespeare and Legacy and How You'd Like to Remember. But first of all, it's time to pass the baton, please. So who in your network, knowing that I'm trying to grow the listenership of this show, Psychat Ahmed, who would you like to pass the golden baton to, please?
Have you spoken to Sally Cookson?
No, I've asked her and she said yes and then she slipped off the hook.
But if you're
suggesting get back on the hook, Sally, that could be really good.
I think Sally's a fascinating person. She's, yeah, wonderful company. And, yeah, I'll go with Sally Cookson.
And now, inspired by Shakespeare and all the world's a stooge and all the men and women merely players, borrowed from the seven ages of man's speech, Psychat Ahmed, when all is said and done, how would you most like to be remembered?
So, given I've spent most of my adult life acting, writing, creating theatre, it feels kind of strange to say this, but I would like to be remembered not for any of that. I'd like to be remembered as someone who cooked a lot of curries, invited friends around, made a lot of jokes. I'd like to be remembered as a father, as a husband. I guess what I'm saying is I want to be remembered for the little moments of kindness. If I've ever shown them or if I've ever had them, that means more to me than any of the work. I do sometimes think about this because, you know, especially after my father passed away, but actually, so I think a lot about mortality. And actually, when I think back on my life, I never, ever, ever think about any of the wonderful jobs that I've done. And they've all been wonderful. I think about the beautiful people I've met. And yeah, I want to be remembered for silly conversations at 3 a.m. and, you know, bottles of beer and bottles of wine and hugs and kisses.
As this has been your moment in the sunshine, in the good listening to share stories of distinction and genius, is there anything else, Psychat, you'd like to say?
I know it's a real cliche, but for anyone who's listening, you're wonderful and you're capable of great things and you're seen and you're loved.
So, ladies and gentlemen, you've been listening to the Wonder Pants that is Mr. Psychat Ahmed, Tinkerbell in a pink tutu. I've been Chris Grimes, but most importantly, that's been Psychat. Tune in next time for more stories from the clearing. And would you like to say anything else?
Thank you. What a joy. What a joy.
And you're welcome. Good night. You've been listening to the Good Listening To show here on UK Health Radio with me, Chris Grimes. Oh, it's my son.
If you've enjoyed the show, then please do tune in next week to listen to more stories from the clearing.
If you'd like to connect with me on LinkedIn, then please do so. There's also a dedicated Facebook group for the show too. You can contact me about the programme, or if you'd be interested in experiencing some personal impact coaching with me, care of my Level Up Your Impact programme, that's chris@secondcurve.uk. On Twitter and Instagram, it's
@thatchrisgrimes.
So until next time, from me, Chris Grimes, from UK Health Radio, and from Stan,
to your good health.
Goodbye.